defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
So Pennsylvania went from having zero women in their congressional delegation to now four. Four women won yesterday in the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th congressional districts. You know, it's tonight, just take the whole line right there. In fact, you know, one flipped the Charlie Dent seat, Susan Wild, which was fantastic to see. Madeline Dean won, Chrissy Houlihan. It was just a great night for women here in the state of Pennsylvania, and also for, you know, I think for the state, because, you know, this was the first ungerrymandered election since the state Supreme Court fixed the maps that Republicans really, really boogered up. So now you have an even split 9-9, as where before it was 12-6. So this Pennsylvania, good on you. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on yesterday's election, a little post-mortem of the year of the woman and how women did across the country. I've asked Shilpa Fadke to come talk with us. She's vice president of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress. Shilpa, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So, like Pennsylvania, I mean, you know, big night for women across the Commonwealth. How'd women fare across the country?
It was a really strong night for women. I think as we look back on this, we really shattered a lot of the records for women running, and I think it's likely, you know, we're going to have more than 100 women serving just in the House alone. And most of those are Democrats. And so it was a really great night for women, for first-time candidates. And it was a really great night for women of color.
So let me ask you, was it the Trump effect? Was it, you know, because, you know, Trump's such a vile character? Or was it because they were running on the issues that are important to families?
I think both. You know, so far it looks, there is a real movement by independent women. They voted for Democratic candidates, you know, 56% to 39%. And so I think when we start seeing independent women coming over this way a little bit, I think it shows that they were fueled, you know, by a distaste for the president. But they also, you know, voted for candidates that showed a vision on the economy, voted for health care, you know, for working family issues. So I think it's both of those things.
So now that we've got, you know, more women, and I've been saying for a long time, you know, look, I'm looking forward to women taking over because maybe they're a little more collaborative than men are. Maybe something will actually get done. Maybe we'll get health care. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get labor law reform. Maybe we'll get the pothole fixed outside of my house. You know, maybe something, right?
I hope so. I think that there's some great promise with this incoming class. I think there are women, you know, that are first-time candidates. Talk about Lucy McBath, you know, who won in Georgia. And, you know, she has a great story on gun control. She's really going to push that issue. I think on issues like guns and gun violence, we're going to see some real progress with this group of women. I think really just across, women were breaking boundaries on gender and race and sexual orientation. We have Muslim women. We have the first Native American women. We have really young women. And I think they are going to be pushing an agenda, you know, on healthcare, on political corruption, on wages, that's really going to be responsive to, you know, millions of Americans.
Well, I mean, that's the hope, right? I mean, at the end of it, you know, I think people voted for progressive candidates because the status quo isn't helping average working people. I mean, I look at the main accomplishment of this administration, which was a giant tax ripoff and a huge handout to the very wealthy that didn't trickle down to the vast majority of working people. And people are still working harder and longer for less. And the hope is and I, you know, a lot of the people that I talk to who voted for progressive candidates say, you know, we've got to get candidates who are going to fight for working class voters again.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think that looks like equal pay for equal work. I think it looks for pushing for the minimum wage, overtime. And there's a range of issues on the economy where working families have really been losing. I also, you know, in just some quick reading, there's a conversation about this surge in female candidates and the focus intensely on healthcare. So it wasn't the bad, you know, the vote, the tax vote is a bad one, but I also think the efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act, you know, really, really hurt some of these Republicans.
As it should have. I mean, at the end of the day, when you're literally taking the last lifeline away from somebody, you should pay a penalty for that. You know, I have a friend who, you know, he's got all kinds of, you know, he had cancer, he's got lupus, he's got all kinds of things, and he is terrified that he's going to lose his health insurance, or that, you know, somehow Trump's going to, you know, defund it to where he doesn't have access to the medication that he needs and the treatments that he needs, because it's going to be the end of his life if that happens. And there are, you know, thousands, if not millions of people across this country in that same situation.
Absolutely. And I think we saw that. And I think the one thing we can feel confident in is that efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act will be protected by this new Democratic House. I think we also saw some really interesting ballot initiatives, from everything on Medicaid expansion, and there, you know, there were some on abortion access as well, some less favorable. But I do think it's been really interesting to watch healthcare and how women have been responding, both to efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act and, of course, efforts to, get in the way of abortion access.
Yeah. Well, were you disappointed by yesterday's results? I mean, I've had some people say, well, there wasn't a blue wave. I'm going, there was a blue wave. They took the House.
I'm feeling really good. I think that the record number of women in Congress is going to make a huge difference. I think when we look at the diversity of these women, so many first Muslim women, first Native women, these younger millennial voices, I feel really good. I also would say it's not all done yet. I mean, the numbers are, you know, growing every minute as some of these California races still keep coming in. So I think people should, you know, feel really good about this and feel good about the governors as well.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of it, you know, I'm thrilled that the Democrats took back the House, because we're going to add some accountability, as I've been saying for a while, some checks and balances. I think that's important. But, you know, one of the things I want Democrats to do first and foremost right now is, you know, I'm looking at Georgia and just an absolute disgrace of what's happened in the state of Georgia with the voter fraud, the voter theft, however you want to frame it, that what this Secretary of State and his office has done in this state, purging voters and now releasing the names of and addresses and reasons that people sought absentee ballots. There has got to be a way to somehow federalize our elections, because it's clear to me that a number of states in this country are incapable of actually administering a vote in this country.
It's unbelievable. I think when you start reading about the stories of people waiting in line 4 or 5 hours in Georgia, the voter suppression techniques have really been bolder than I've ever remembered. And I think that's why, you know, Stacey Abrams hasn't, is still fighting for every vote, because I think once those votes all come in, I'm not sure how this ends up, and she could take the lead. I also think we're going to potentially see a recount in Florida.
That's what I'm hoping for.
The voter suppression tactics are really awful.
No, the voter theft tactics. Mm-hmm. I'm done with suppression. This is on purpose. They're doing this with malice and forethought. The idea that you would show up without a cord for a machine is to me should be criminal.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'll pay for the bracelets. I'd be happy to lock people up, and I'll even pay for the bracelets. Because, look, if this were, and I said this at the beginning, if this were to happen in the country of Georgia instead of the state of Georgia, we'd be condemning that election.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right about that. So, and I think what will be interesting is to see, you know, how the next couple days and weeks and where these numbers really end up. And I do think we can increase our numbers in the House. You know, it could be 40 that we flipped at the end of the day.
Yeah. Let me ask you a last line of questioning, because, look, you know, there were a lot of women who are now going to be sitting congresswomen, and they're going to be dealing with this president who has, well, I'm not quite sure how the right words to put in. The idea that he can just grab, you know, walk up and grab somebody by the you-know-what whenever he wants to. With all those women around, how do you think that dynamic is going to work?
Well, I think that we have, you know, over 100 women in Congress. A lot of these are new women who, let's be honest, they woke up the day after the 2016 election. They didn't recognize their country. And so they didn't wait their turn. They, you know, didn't wait for the party apparatus in their state to give them a blessing. They just went for it. And so I think these are women that, you know, will have to be reckoned with. And I think they're going to be very strong. They're there to make an impact. And when you couple that with the women who are going to be in leadership positions, whether, you know, it's the speaker or heads of major committees, you know, women and people of color, I think it's something like half the committees will be leading. And so they will actually have the structure in place to make their voices heard through things like the appropriations process.
Well, I mean, that's the hope. I mean, the hope is that, again, they figure out how to unite and to push through an agenda that's actually going to make people's lives better. Because, look, at the end of the day, everyone keeps saying, you know, government's broken. And, hey, Republicans have done a masterful job of breaking our government. It plays right into their frame. What Democrats have to figure out how to do is how to unbreak it.
Yep. I think that's right. And I think that people are looking to Democrats and especially to these new women to advance an agenda and to really demand, you know, an end to these harmful policies that are hostile to women forever. You know, all of these, we can relive the Kavanaugh debate, you know, but everyone that sort of made these decisions and votes at the expense of women's lives. And I think this is really going to be a powerful moment.
I'm hoping, and I'm sure as the days and weeks move along, you'll come back and explain to me exactly what all these women are doing and hopefully pushing a much, much more progressive, family-centric, a better agenda for working people than the Republicans have done over the last 2 years. But Silpa, I appreciate the time.
No, thank you for having me.
Good stuff. Thanks so much. Silpa Fadke, Vice President of the Women's Initiative there at the Center for American Progress. Make sure you check out their website, AmericanProgress.org. Quick break. Right back with our good friend Scott Dworkin. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
10% of the wealth. 10% of the people own 90% of the wealth. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people